afternoon, and welcome to the only show you need to get you through this Tuesday, to get you through this crisis. In a world where so few things are reliable right now, we are reliable. To Jason Rancho, we're live on AM 770 KTTH and 94.5 FM on the Greater East Side. We got a lot to get to. We only have 3 hours to do it. President Trump just unveiled his executive order on policing. We're going to get into the details. We have an update on the CHOP. City came through, came in, and started to redefine the area. Plus, Seattle City Council possibly just made it more dangerous to police and more dangerous to protest. We're going to get into that and so much more. This hour of the Jason Rancho is brought to you by Alpine Specialty Cleaning. Lots of news is happening all around the world and right here at home. So, let's find out what's trending.
What's trending at home?
So, the Seattle City Council did something that I think they'll regret. I certainly don't want them to regret it. I don't want anyone to regret it, considering the topic that we're talking about and the implications of something like this. I certainly hope, I am wrong. But in a conversation about what to do about use of force being maybe a little bit too aggressive coming from the SPD, they move a little bit too quickly. The Seattle City Council just decided to ban pretty much every single non-lethal tool when dealing with these protests. Now, that does not seem like it is productive to the cause. Because if you're trying to get folks in a situation where it's less dangerous when cops have to interact with the protests that can get out of hand, and we've certainly seen them get out of hand, it doesn't seem wise to take away the non-lethal tools, and yet that's what they did. In this case, they banned using owning, using, purchasing, renting, storing, any munition that could be used to control or disperse crowds. And they're doing this because folks like Dan Strauss considers crowd control weapons of war.
Weapons of war have no place on our streets here in Seattle.
But they're not on the streets of Seattle. That's not what's going on. And I have to assume Dan Strauss knows that. Implementing a non-lethal form of crowd dispersal is not a weapon of war. Something tells me in war, they actually aim to do literal damage to people, not just scare them away. But fine, they did it. That's what they did. And council member Teresa Mosqueda, who is running for mayor, Jason tells the future, put that down for today, June 16th, 3 o'clock, even though I've made that point multiple times before.
I'll just chalk it down right now.
But let's just, because I can't remember the last time I've asked you to write that down, 3:06 p.m., I'm telling you now, Teresa Mosqueda is running for mayor, and she is setting up all of her legislation in lead up to that announcement. Well, she said this is all about protecting speech.
That as elected officials, our job is to protect residents, especially right now, to protect First Amendment rights.
Okay, this is all about the First Amendment rights. Got it. This bans pretty much everything. Almost everything. Almost everything that the cops are using right now. And it even severely limits pepper spray, where you can now, again, only use it on one person at a time. And normally you would say that makes total sense. But when you're talking about the use of pepper spray during a protest that is turning into a riot, sometimes you do have to do a spray across a number of people. But Shama Sawant tells Como TV,
these bans, in my view, are the bare minimum that we should be doing as a city council.
The bare minimum is to take away all of their non-lethal tools. So my assumption is the maximum is literally taking away their guns as well. Now, that's kind of shocking. Now, the police chief said she's still reviewing the legislation to see how it's going to impact her officers, and she's going to check in with other cities, departments that have to deal with similar pieces of legislation just to get a better sense of what they do in situations in which they very clearly need to use this to disperse a crowd that's getting unruly. But what the Seattle City Council just did was leave cops who might be overrun by those unruly protesters turning into rioters. You've just decided to leave those cops only with their guns and their batons. Is that truly safe? Is that as safe as it would be if you were to give them specifically the tear gas, for example, to use to disperse folks? So when a whole bunch of people, let's say you are at the front lines, you got a big crowd, and you're protecting something from imminent danger. And let's use this, because we're told over and over and over again that the city had actionable intelligence to suggest that the East Precinct was going to be burned down. So in a case like that, and you've got a large crowd, and they're starting to throw things at you, rocks, and bottles, and bricks, and fireworks, and you feel like this is getting out of control, and you can see them pushing against the barrier, and you've been tasked with protecting this East Precinct, not just because we don't want to lose a precinct, but because it's actually connected, the structure, the building, is connected to an apartment complex. How then do you disperse that crowd if you think it's that close to imminent danger for everybody? And it's a reasonable position for someone to take. How exactly do you disperse that crowd? Or is now the rule, because I'm presuming, and I don't want cops to do this, they can do hand-to-hand combat, I guess, which they're not going to. You can have them use their firearm, which we don't want them to do. So is the rule now to just simply let them take over? Whomever is going after that East Precinct, just have at it? Is that? And I ask that seriously, because there's a way to get in the way of this. There's a way to get in the way of having that crowd become a little bit too aggressive to the point where they're going to burn down that East Precinct. You disperse them using non-lethal tools. Because what you don't want to do is just indiscriminately injure someone who is not part of the nastiness. They're just there because they don't realize that there's some nastiness going on. And while no one wants to have to breathe in the tear gas, it certainly beats getting shot or getting hit in the head with a baton. So I don't know what the cops are supposed to do here. And I ask that seriously.
I don't have a serious answer for you. I have the answer of the city council will tell police to just ask them nicely over and over again.
Or just ignore the fact that there's any violence to begin with. Which I get why, and we'll talk about a little bit later on in the show, why people are pretending that everything is peaceful at the chop. I get why people do that. I get why people say that. But it's just not true. And you're now taking another tool from the arsenal for police officers to use to safely, not ideally, but safely disperse a crowd. We know what happens every single May Day, not the last couple of years. Obviously, this past year, we were dealing with a pandemic. But we've certainly been in cases in which we've seen the anarchists, not the protesters, but the anarchists, start to destroy property and try to cause riots. What are we supposed to do? Just give over the city to them? And as we're talking about living in this fantasy land of what CHOP actually is, we're now pretending that CHOP is not a no-cop zone. We are pretending that cops can just patrol freely in the East Precinct. Come and go whenever you want from the building. Chief Best said to CNN,
there's not a no Seattle Police Department response zone.
So that is not true. That is simply not true. Now, I think she's playing a semantics game, because she'll tell you that if there is an emergency like a mass shooting or something, God forbid, they would respond. That is true. But if you were to call 911, because let's say someone stole your cell phone and you could literally see them hanging out in the park at Cal Anderson Park, you're just like, it's right there, he's got my phone. You call 911, the police are not going to show up and they're not going to engage. And so if there are certain circumstances in which the SPD is being ordered not to go into a zone, that makes it a no-cop zone. If your business is being broken into and your livelihood is on the line, in some cases, you can call 911 15 to 18 times and the cops don't show up. And that's by order. That's not the cops doing this. I don't want people to forget that. Cops will go in, but they're not allowed to. And that's exactly what happened to Cartender. We talked with the son of the owner yesterday on this show. Overnight, Monday night, or Sunday night into Monday morning, someone tried to burn the place down. They were unsuccessful, thankfully. And then a large crowd gathered demanding that the owners of this building release the guy they caught, they say, breaking into and destroying their property. They called 911. The son said they called between 15 and 18 times, and they did not get a police response.
I am very shaken up. I am very disappointed in the city's leadership. I'm very disappointed in the lack of police protection.
Why didn't they show up if this has nothing to do with a no cop zone? I get that there's going to be some nuances in talking about policing in this particular area. Because cops showing up, we know exactly what happens. The crowd gets incredibly hostile, and that's a shame. And she acknowledges that.
We have to thread the needle there. We have to make sure people are safe, but we don't want to have a confrontation that ends up with more people hurt.
Fair enough, but that's because you set up a no cop zone that we're pretending doesn't exist. But she did say the cartender situation a little bit different than what we're told. She confirmed that cops never actually showed up to talk to anybody, but they were kind of there.
They observed the location from a distance. They did not see any signs of smoke or fire or anything else. And they did not see a disturbance. The officers did not observe, based on the report that I read, anything that they perceived as a threat to life safety. Clearly, if there's something that's a life safety situation, somebody injured, shots fired, that kind of thing, we don't have any other choice. We're going in.
Okay, so unless it's that, then you're not going in. That's literally a no-cop zone. In situations in which you need someone to show up and you haven't actually been shot. And for the most part, when you call 911, it's not because you've just been shot. It's because there is a fear, a reasonable fear of something that happens and could happen. And the thing is, they didn't talk to the owners. They've got a police report. They didn't talk to the owners, at least as of yesterday when we talked to the guy. When you've got a mob surrounding your business, tearing it down, vandalizing it, a guy in quote-unquote custody that you caught trying to burn it down, when you call 911, what is your expectation? That they watch from a distance or that they actually show up and help settle the situation?
They've absolutely not taken any kind of statement from us yet whatsoever. They did not show up last night. We called, you know, multiple times. We called. My Uncle Russ called multiple times. My dad called multiple times. And nobody came.
Nobody came. Nobody came. That is not appropriate. That is not appropriate in any city. Not in 2020. Then when a mob of people are outside of your business, threatening your business, threatening your livelihood, that you sort of sit this one out. Because you're scared of what the mob might do. We're not run by a mob. We have law and order. We have rules. I understand that maybe the city of Seattle doesn't like that right now. And I understand that Chief Carmen Best is in a tough position. I do. But that seems like a situation that an officer should actually show up to. And again, those officers want to. But they're not allowed. I learned something last night, Producer Peyton.
Wow, you're old for learning things. Usually people stop learning things.
You hit that age, you stop learning, now you're teaching.
Exactly.
I learned something last night, something that I probably should have learned a long time ago. People don't understand satire.
They don't?
And I suppose I don't completely blame the people who were trolling me or dunking on me on Twitter last night and continuing to this moment. I posted a photo of my Tucker Carlson hit. And we purposefully were outside of the zone. And we called it on air the space. I can't believe I will play the audio in a second. Like the spot between the demilitarized zone of Chaz or Chop and the city of Seattle. Now, the whole demilitarized zone should have been key to people. That code, that word should have been the flag that said, maybe we're doing satire here.
That was the root of the joke, and you're saying that people missed out on
that? No. They got mad and called me out for being a mile away from the Chop. And I was trying to figure out Are these people dunking on me knowing the truth? Like, is this a bad faith thing? Or do they just not realize it? And I couldn't figure it out because I had tweeted within maybe a minute or two of the photo, the video, in which we talk very clearly in terms of satire, unless people actually believe that there is a dodgeball competition in the Olympics.
They probably do.
And I don't know how people didn't realize it was satire. And then I realized what I did wrong.
Everyone hates you.
These people don't know me. They have no, these people just found the tweet because I put chop in it. I did not connect the two tweets together. It was not a thread.
So they would have to click on your profile and then go and see your other tweet to connect the two.
Correct. Now, once I realized that, I made an addendum to point out people are not realizing this. People still yelled at me.
Anything
and then people were like, oh, so now you're just running for cover. You're saying it's satire. Well, you can watch any of the other hits that I've done. All the videos are there.
Anything you do will get hate.
It's insane. So reporting from the demilitarized zone between the CHOP and the city of Seattle, I was there with Tucker.
Seattle radio host Jason Rance is Fox's envoy to CHOP, unofficial. We don't have diplomatic privileges yet, but he joins us from just over the border in the United States. Jason, what's it look like there in the DMZ?
It's kind of interesting. You've got these weird statements and speeches demanding money, and then immediately afterwards you go in and have a dodgeball game, which of course is kind of interesting, I suppose, if you're trying to establish yourself as this new nation. Perhaps you're trying to get into the Olympics. And I do have to say I was inspired to leave because I'm an adult who doesn't think dodgeball is actually going to solve any of the problems. At the same time, you've got some concerns with the police force. Not only is it the John Brown Gun Club, heavily armed without any training, pushed by a dangerous ideology. What could possibly go wrong? You then, of course, have Raz Simone still there trying to overcome the fact that he had some less than woke moments. Some tweets came up that were pretty homophobic, and so he's claiming that someone pulled a Joy Reid, so maybe Joy Reid will end up, once that exhaustive investigation is done, look into who photoshopped his tweets. We'll find out.
Maybe the FBI, maybe Joy Reid will get to the bottom of that. By the way, I just heard that our cameraman, Kyle Rothenberg, who was at the DMZ between the two Koreas, is at the DMZ there, and quite an intrepid character. So how long is this going to continue? Have you spoken to authorities in Seattle? Is this kind of the permanent state of downtown now?
Right now, it's the permanent state. There's no plans to get involved. Mayor Jenny Durkin, I guess, with her security, decided to make a diplomatic trip over to the garden, and there was nothing that came out of it, other than maybe they got more Gatorade from their no-cop co-op. There's literally no plan for them to change anything, so this can go on for a very long time, and when you look at their demands, which include getting rid of the police force, getting rid of jails, de-gentrifying, obviously those things aren't going to happen, fingers crossed, so we don't know exactly what the game plan is on how to end this.
I'm glad mom's bringing in Gatorade. What about the Americans stuck within on the wrong side of the border, the people who own businesses within CHOP? How are they holding up?
Not too well. So there was a Daily Beast article that said all these businesses, they just adore CHOP and Chaz and all these folks. And yet, when I talk to some of the businesses, number one, they tell me they're scared to death to actually speak up because they realize what could happen to them. And last night or early this morning, there was an arson attempt at a business that's just a block and a half from CHOP. And they ended up, the business owners, caught the guy. But they tell me that a whole bunch of people, protesters, demanded that they get this guy turned over or face more destruction. So they called 911, they said 15 to 18 times, and they didn't get a single cop to show up. The fire department can't show up when the cops don't show up. So it's a big mess, and it's dangerous.
It's awful. It's such a beautiful city, or was. Jason Rance, thanks so much for that report. Great to see you tonight.
So obviously, I was somewhat wrong in that they did make a decision to make some changes, though not as many changes as people maybe had hoped. They've decided to reopen some of the streets, although it's unclear whether or not that's going to actually stay in effect. Because when you're dealing with a group of people that doesn't have a clear leader, when you negotiate, you're leaving people off the table, which means they're not going to be happy necessarily. And as of about an hour ago, we got word from Simone Del Rosario from Q13 that they actually chased SDOT out because they were putting in these barricades to allow for cars. So we'll get an update on that.
They chased them out?
Yeah.
Wow, that's so undiplomatic.
Yeah. But again, what do you expect is going to happen when there's a whole bunch of different people in an area and there's not any leadership? When you go in and you're saying, okay, well, let's compromise.
You mean, isn't that the...
I'm Henry Clay.
That's the root of peace and harmony right there,
yeah.
Is
and
no
it totally
leadership.
Is, but there's no... No! No!
Yes, that's exactly right. Come on, Jason, get on board.
Oh, just play the music. This is just so ridiculous.
Why is it... It's You're just, no fun. Have
yeah,
fun.
No.
You should go do your live hit tonight from CHOP, the middle of CHOP.
I'm going to do it on top of the East Precinct. How about that? On Tucker Carlson. They'll helicopter me in.
You know, it's been like 3 days of the name CHOP, and I think Chaz lasted about 3 days. Is there a new name on the way?
I have to assume at some point it's going to be a Yugoslavia situation where you're just breaking up the area, and it's going to be four, maybe five different names. Callie Anderson Park should be named something. You know, you got 12th and Pine, 11th and Pine, 10th and Pine. 10th and Pine is really a small street, so that would be a little baby movement. But it's something. The Jets are coming. I don't know. You're listening to the Jason Rancho. When we come back, we're going to dive into the executive order coming from the president on policing. We're going to get into that and so much more. You're listening to the Jason Rancho. To the Jason Rand Show, we're going to take a look at how President Donald Trump decided via an executive order tackle the topic of police brutality and policing in the United States. But first, we go live to CHOP, a newly defined CHOP, with Simone Del Rosario from Q13 Fox News. She's on the ground and she's been following the developments of these as they've changed over the course of the last several hours. Welcome to the show.
Thanks, Jason. Good to be here.
So it seems like the Capitol Hill occupation or organized protests, the zone has gotten much smaller. Take us through exactly what happened today.
Well, look, this is an area that we see continue to take shape and things change on the ground very quickly. If you come here every single day, you're going to see something different. Yep. But even within an hour or so, you're going to see things change drastically. So what happened today was that after a meeting with some organizers and some city officials like Fire Chief Scoggins over the past 24 hours or so, is that SDOT crews came into this Capitol Hill occupied protest area known as CHOP and started installing these concrete barriers down right down the middle of East Pine Street. And they have wood parts on top where protesters are supposed to be able to do some kind of artwork on them. But really the purpose behind this was for the city to find a way to be able to get emergency vehicles down into this area, in addition to opening it up to local traffic. And as these barriers are being installed throughout the day, they reached a point this afternoon where some of the protesters had decided these barriers went too far. It wasn't what they discussed. And so I watched as one of the protesters with a megaphone actually kind of chased off the SDOT crews that were just finishing up their work. So really the work had been done to this point, but those crews moved off very quickly when that happened.
So, you know, we were talking about in the last segment of how difficult it has to be for the city if you're, quote unquote, negotiating with a group of people that has no leader. And it's not like there's one group that's there. A whole bunch of different interests and groups are represented in the CHOP. Is there any idea who they actually were talking with from the protest?
They were talking with a few different organizers. A lot of people out here, I'll say, not giving their full name. But I was talking to them as this was going in place, and even people who are quote-unquote organizers down on the ground here who don't agree with each other, everyone started to feel very uneasy about the way that the barriers were taking shape down here. And so they're kind of moving with the flow, and when people start to feel very uncomfortable with what's happening, that's when they take a stand, and that's what they did.
So, yeah, but they took a stand after the barriers were put in place, and these are not barriers that can easily be moved, correct?
No, you have heavy equipment out here that are moving them. And in fact, in an hour or so, I'm hoping to be able to speak with Seattle Fire Chief Scoggins out here to find out what the new plan is. For now, the barriers are in place, but SDOT crews are not working on them anymore. And from what organizers on the ground are telling me, they do hope that some change will come tomorrow.
Well, we'll see exactly what happens. Simone Del Rosario from Q13 Fox News. She's down there on the ground reporting there. By the way, you can follow her on Twitter. Simone Reports on Twitter. Simone, thank you so much for stopping by. I really appreciate it.
Thanks, Jason.
Absolutely. So I'm very curious as to where this is all going to go. We've got some audio we'll play in the next hour of some of the folks that she was referencing there who were upset with the direction that this seemed to be taking. This whole idea, it is just on its surface weird because they said from the beginning, we don't want any barriers. Get rid of the barriers. And then they agreed to have some barriers. And maybe the barriers are looking like barriers that they don't like. So I don't quite understand. And I was talking with some reporters earlier today as this was happening. I just don't understand why the organizer said yes if their whole goal was to open up the entirety of the space and not allow police to be able to drive through. So it just seems like we're setting this up for more conflict at a time where I think the consensus should be that we don't want any more fighting. We don't want any more yelling. We have the president today who came out with an executive order trying to address some of the issues concerning policing in this country. And it should have been viewed as this really pivotal moment at a time where there's a lot of anxiety and anger and frustration and concern.
And thank you all for being here as we take historic action to deliver a future of safety and security for Americans of every race, religion, color, and creed. We're joined today by law enforcement professionals and community leaders. Though we may all come from different places and different backgrounds, we're united by our desire to ensure peace and dignity and equality for all Americans.
Now, I thought the tone of the speech was really, really appropriate. It was what we needed to hear from him today. But the question, of course, always comes down to the details. Are they good enough? Now, this executive order essentially sets up what could be described as a federal standard for the use of force and policing in general. And according to this executive order, if you meet the standards that they outline, you get prioritization for federal funding. So if you're able to implement their policies, you get to be prioritized higher over the departments that have chosen not to, or departments that can't. Now, one big thing that this does is creates a database to track police officers who've got multiple complaints of some kind of misconduct. Believe it or not, that does not exist. In fact, a lot of the things where we say, oh, let's look at the data is not very, very clear half the time. And it's slow to come, the ones that we do get. So this would create that database. It also bans the use of chokeholds, except in cases in which an officer's life is on the line. And that already is kind of the rule of policing for the most part. I mean, the Supreme Court has weighed in on this in the past saying, yeah, you get to use that kind of force if any reasonable person would say your life is on the line. And then it also does something that we've talked about on this show. Calls on police departments to involve social workers, mental health professionals on the calls that are dealing with mental illness, addiction, homelessness. Now, of course, for something like that, you have to put money into the department, which is why the president flatly says no to defunding. Now, some people like this order, at least aspects of it. Van Jones was on CNN to praise it.
The executive order is a good thing, and mainly because you saw the support of law enforcement there. That gives you a sense of where the bottom is, where the floor is for reform. And that floor is higher than it has been. There is movement in the direction of a database for bad cops. We've never had a federal database for bad cops. That's why these cops go all over the place doing bad stuff.
So there you go. That's at least one pretty prominent voice on the left, at least by CNN standards. But of course, there's a lot of people who are still hating on the president for what he did here. They either don't think it does anything at all, doesn't go far enough, isn't the right approach. Joe Estead is a former Richmond, Virginia police officer who was on CNN that said this isn't going to help anything.
Absolutely nothing. It will not do anything to correct police brutality, which is the real issue. You can't have a recommendation to fixing police. That's not going to work. The police entities operate within their own culture. They've been doing it for many, many years. We need real legislation that's going to stop, that's going to punish.
Okay, well then, should the president not do anything at all? Should he not lead? I mean, the truth is, there, what he just said there is fact. When we're talking about this kind of issue, policing is not going to be decided by the president. The president, regardless of who's in power, can only do so much. This is being done, or it needs to be done, on a local level, and yes, from a congressional standpoint. He's laying the groundwork for Congress to get more involved. And he's saying, look, the one thing I do have power over is how much money this administration is going to give the police departments. And so if you want to be prioritized for an increase to your budget with our help, you have to adopt these policies. I don't think there's anything wrong with this. He's doing everything that the president can do in a situation that he finds himself in. If you want to have some sort of change on the level of in Everett or in Bellevue or in Seattle or Tacoma, well, you have to talk to the police chiefs there, the city councils and mayors there. That's what this is about. But then, of course, some people couldn't just focus on the content of the executive order. They had to get all mad that the president decided to come out so strongly in favor of the police departments. You had outlets like NPR and CNN. They seemed upset. They were certainly critical that in this speech, the president backed the cops.
Every day, police officers make great sacrifices to keep our communities secure and safe. In 2018, our police arrested nearly 12,000 people for murder, 25,000 people for rape, and nearly 1.5 million for assault. Very dangerous criminals.
So what? We're supposed to just, at a time where police morale is down, just lay it on top of them even harder? Hit them harder? Is that what NPR and CNN actually wants? I was reading this thing. I was like, just focus on the content of the executive order. That is the bulk of this. But they're mad. And Van Jones kind of implied this. I mean, you need to have the support of police. And speaking to the cops in this country, having them there at the speech, that shows you that even the police departments are behind this kind of change. And that's an important piece of symbolism to folks who think cops are the problem and they're the only ones standing in the way of reform. So you had someone there representing various police departments all across the country. Now, the president did meet with the families of Ahmaud Arbery, Antoine Rose, Michael Dean, Cameron Lamb, Everett Palmer, victims of police brutality. And he spoke directly to the loved ones who lost people.
To all of the hurting families, I want you to know that all Americans mourn by your side. Your loved ones will not have died in vain. We are one nation. We grieve together and we heal together. I can never imagine your pain or the depth of your anguish, but I can promise to fight for justice for all of our people.
And again, just quickly, Van Jones made the same point after that, said by all accounts, this was an emotional meeting. People were crying. It was appropriate. Everyone basically got to tell their story, and they had the audience of the president. To get upset or to rip on the president for this just shows you you're never going to be happy with anything he does. So why even try? Why even put on this front? Just say breaking news. We still don't like President Trump no matter what he does. You're listening to The Jason Rand Show. When we come back, Starbucks stepped in it, then cleaned it off their shoe. Then they stepped in it again, and I think they cleaned it off their shoe. What did they step in? We're going to get into it when we come back right here on The Jason Rand Show. Welcome back to The Jason Rand Show. Thank you so much for tuning in. I really do appreciate it. Last week, Starbucks was reportedly reversing the stance that they took on baristas and other employees essentially wearing clothing or accessories that support the Black Lives Matter movement. And people are all like, oh, that's kind of good. People who want to wear that kind of clothing. But then, of course, their celebration subsided, turned to anger, because then a memo came out that basically said, look, our dress code won't allow for it. And so it looked like they had walked it back, which then ticked off a lot of people, including... That's Ariana Grande.
You're darn right it is.
It's labeled in my system, Ariana Grande lyrics no one can understand. So we must have done a segment years and years ago when her album came out to play a piece of her music that no one could quite understand.
You're not wrong.
I can't understand half the things she sings. She is so upset with Starbucks, she unfollowed them on Instagram.
That means it's serious in millennial.
You can't take that back. You can't unfollow and then follow again without losing some face. So she'll never have to look at the stupid things that they tweet. I can't imagine that Starbucks tweets anything interesting or Instagrams anything interesting.
It's the principle, Jason.
But then she did. Oh, but this is what she did. This happened late last night or afternoon. She posted a photo of an iced coffee from Nimbus Coffee, which is apparently a wizard-themed coffee shop in L.A. And she wrote on it, mmm, and then she tagged Nimbus Coffee.
That company probably blew up after that Instagram post or tweet.
I mean, that just seems like a useless kind of blow-up, because it's not like it's a national chain. It's not like all of her fans live in Los Angeles. But okay, fine. It's certainly for the people in L.A. It brought attention to them. So now, I don't know if this was a result of the pushback from Ariana or the pushback from other people in the community. Starbucks walked back their policy yet again, it sounds like, and now they're saying you are allowed to wear Black Lives Matter t-shirts, pins, and name tags, but I guess that's it.
So you can wear the t-shirt, but under the green apron that you have to wear?
Yes.
Or can you forego the apron to wear the t-shirt?
I don't think you're allowed to forego the apron, which is why presumably they say you can wear a pin or a name tag.
Okay, that's a good alternative.
Because not everyone who's working at Starbucks has the apron on all the time. They take the apron off sometimes.
I don't know. I don't go there.
I haven't been there in forever because it's been closed due to the coronavirus.
Well, I just don't go there because I like good coffee.
I got it. The company wrote on Twitter saying, our partners, employees, and can we not do that?
Our partners?
Yeah, just stop. That I find that condescending.
Call them baristas. Call them what they are.
Or just your employees. You're not my partner. You're the producer of the show.
Whoa, whoa, whoa.
We're not on the same level.
This is my show.
And that's okay.
This is the producer Peyton show. Only,
how about this? If they're partners, why don't you pay them what the actual partners are getting paid?
I agree.
Give,
we
give
should
us
do
a
that.
Vice presidential.
We should do that on this show.
No, that's why I don't pretend that you're my partner. You're not my partner. You're a producer who probably won't even be here in 6 months. I know what you're up to.
You're going
to
fire me.
Of course. Or you'll leave like they all do. Our partners, employees, told us that they need a way to express themselves at work, and we heard them, standing together against racial injustice. I've taken this position in the past. I don't think any business should take a stand on anything political, controversial or not. I think they should be as apolitical as possible, and I know some people want to pretend that the Black Lives Matter movement isn't political, but it is a political movement. You separate out the words Black Lives Matter, because of course they do. But then there is a movement that right now on their website is advocating for defunding the police. Again, we can pretend that that is not controversial if we want to live in that crazy land, but it very clearly is. So why put yourself in a position where you ever have to say in the future no to someone who wants to display a political statement? Or whether, or again, whether or not it is controversial. What if someone wants to say, I support clean air? That's what I support. So now, it's not controversial. There's no one out there who's all like, I want dirty air. Everyone wants clean air. So they say, okay, Barista John, you get to wear the clean air button. Someone comes later, I want clean water. Okay, fine. That's non-controversial. Go for it. Clean water. Then the other one comes up, says, I want to say something like Jewish Lives Matter. Because you see, there was a whole bunch of Jews in New York that have been getting assaulted. And right now, it sure seems like they're getting targeted again by the coronavirus lockdown policies. I want to support my Jewish brothers and sisters. Well, I don't. Do we really want to do that? What do you mean? Do we really? Black Lives Matter, you allow. Clean air, you allow. Clean water, you allow. It is a slippery slope, and I don't generally like slippery slope arguments, but I don't know if there was ever a bigger slippery slope argument than this. Now, they have every right to do it. They can go ahead and be permissive in some regard and not in others. That's up to them. And the customer base generally, when people say, I will never shop there again because of this. No. If you're a fan of the place, you're still going to shop there. Very few people actually change their habits. I just seems like you're asking yourself for trouble down the line. Because in a year, let's say all of the police brutality situations have gotten under control thanks to leadership on a local and national level, and everyone is generally okay. Someone's going to say, I now want to wear my sticker or my button. And you're going to have to tell them no. And then when that person tells you no, you're going to come back and say, oh, so you don't care about the Jews who are getting beat up in New York and New Jersey? Why put yourself in that position? Why? We're going to hear the latest from CHOP when we come back. You're listening to The Jason Rant Show.